Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. There's a quote, I don't know where I stole that, but I steal a lot of quotes because I just like how they weave words, you know, I like literature at this point. It's a very simple way of putting it. The quote goes that any law that's made by men that doesn't fit the circumstances of reality will be violated. Any law that's made by men that does not fit the circumstances of reality will be violated. The example the gentleman, an old gentleman, and old is wisdom. And a lot of people don't want to acknowledge how old they are these days. That's because they want to keep lying to themselves that, you know what, I'm still fit and strong. Your back will keep telling you, no, we're in our 30, Baba. We can't keep doing this. But anyway, what that brings to my mind is that we have a lot of laws, a lot of laws on this planet regulating pretty much everything from, social construction, even though most of it is not, most of it is not written. We obey those laws. No one is going to run, no one in their right mind will run around the street with their, with their clothes off because, well, you don't need someone to write down a law for you. That commandment by 11, thou shalt put on your clothes, in thine clothes every time thou leaveth the house. No. It's called common sense. But why am I bringing that up? It's because today we're going to talk about one of the dilemmas that we face in the 21st century. And most of the discussion that we're going to be having today is going to be going back to COP29 that took place in Baku, Azerbaijan last year. But we're not going to be talking about it in overall COP29 and the agenda and stuff and all that. But we're just going to be talking about it as the dilemma that comes out of events events like COP29 among other COPs. COP30 this year is taking place in Brazil. Now, we are going to be talking about COP29 from the, the light of the National Council. Of the National Council's report that is, coming out of the members of the Standing Committee on Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resources. Yesterday we were talking about one about housing, land, and transport that found themselves in Rwanda last year. These guys found themselves in Azerbaijan to attend COP29. Now, the report was compiled not on what was discussed and who attended and blah 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 and all that, but the report was compiled on a lot of things. But today's discussion is going to be based on what we are trying to balance. How a lot of countries with regards to the climate change mitigation strategies are actually trying to balance a seesaw between, especially developing countries like Namibia. We are trying to balance a seesaw between advancing industrial wise and also saving the environment all at the same time. And when you look at these two, they are actually, the statement itself is a contradiction in terms. And that's because saving the environment means planting more trees and, burning less fossil fuels, and then burning less and less fossil fuels, reducing it down to zero. Except the problem is industrialization means burning, until we figure out an alternative form of energy that will replace fossil fuel, which we use, by far the largest, the largest source of energy that we use on a daily basis compared to other sources is a fossil fuel. Because fossil fuel is not just a form of energy, it also dominates a large part of our industrial supply, all across supply chains of a lot of products. Your clothes, for example, they is, fossil fuel, fossil fuels plays a role in there. The fuel that you are using, whether you are driving a diesel car, or you are driving a petrol car, or you are burning paraffin at home, you are burning methane or propane. All these can either directly or indirectly be traced in terms of origin. They can be traced back to to fossil fuel. So fossil fuel. Green hydrogen, on the other hand, take for example solar. Solar is a source of energy. That's just into energy. That's it. You don't use sunlight to make clothes. But you use some of the byproducts, or more like some of them. Crude oil crude oil is a term that's more often used to refer to fossil fuel. But crude oil is a very interesting term when you look at it, because there are a lot of products that are just cocktailed together by Mother Nature by billions of years of evolution or creation, depending which one you subscribe to. I don't care. One thing that you see here is that fossil fuel is not something that we are getting away from anytime soon. Now, because of that, it's putting more like it's one of the giant fork in the road in between our road to in between us and industrialization. Last year's COP, last year's G7 summit, one thing that was, it took place in Italy. One thing that was pointed out is that even developed countries have a growth strategy. They need a growth strategy. They are not going to say, we are developed, we have subsidized it, pretty much most of the services, and our people are happy, so we may as well just stop growing. When it comes to economic development, it seems like we are, it's a little bit suicidal, because it doesn't have a ceiling that, once you reach that level, you have now grown enough and you now have to stop growing. I really wish there was that ceiling, but it turns out there is no such a ceiling. It's sort of like making money as an individual. No one have made money to the point where they said, I think I've made enough money now. I'm not going to make any more. And joining us is yours truly, Dwight. How were the events?
The events, Hamoud?
Before I catch you up.
Before we catch me up?
Yeah.
But I'm the one that technically also helped us catch up to where you and I both are.
Uh-huh. Now, where was I?
The catching up.
Yeah, the catching up. Now, the catching up is, if you look at it, one, every country needs a growth strategy, economic-wise. Developing countries, on the other hand, needs that growth strategy even more. It's even more dire in our situations. Mm. Because every country has a growth strategy in terms of industrialization, and we have not perfected green sources of energy to replace fossil fuel, there seem to be a contradiction in the way that we are setting up our goals in terms of our industrial goals. And saving the environment. Mm. Saving the environment requires us to use less and less fossil fuel. Our industrial goals, until we perfect the green energy sources, requires us to use more and more fossil fuel for us to reach our annual industrial goals. Now, that raises up one question.
Yep.
How the heck are we going to do this? Because, saving the environment is going, use less resources. Industrial goals are saying use more resources. We're caught in between a rock and a hard place.
For a moment, I thought you said it was useless.
Use less. Oh, thank heavens.
Not useless.
Useless.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, use less resources.
Well, it's a good pun, if it ever was one.
Oh, yeah, it's a very good one. Now, that takes us to one point that I remember you made yesterday. That, the ozone layer statistics that scientists started observing during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm.
That seems like it was one heck of a quick recovery in that short period of time.
In 2 years.
Yeah.
It was, Helmut. But remember, this was obviously as the whole transport systems around the world
came to a standstill.
Were told to stand still.
Yeah.
The whole transport systems.
What happened to the economy?
What? Oh, God, you just...
Exactly. Now you see the dilemma. To save the environment, you know, you have to, you know, until you figure out, you know, an alternative source of energy to fossil fuel, it is still going to be, in my point of view, a dilemma that we will be, that we'll be looking at.
Mm.
Now, bring us back to the National Council's, a report on the COP29 that took place in Azerbaijan last year.
This
section of it which we are going to be using throughout today's show is can we balance achieving food security in terms of our agricultural practice and also stick to our Paris agreements of carrying out our climate change mitigation strategies on an annual basis.
Mm.
So we have food security goals to achieve and also environmental protection and also a climate change mitigation strategy goals to achieve. The question is, can we balance this seesaw? So that's pretty much going to be today's show for the most part.
It even becomes a little bit scarier, Helmut, because I now have to make things... Okay, I'm not going to be a bad cop right now, nor am I going to be some sort of a coroner or mortuary assistant or morgue assistant.
Seriously?
So, the particular platform, if I can just sort of like jog the memory of our listeners to the events of COP29 that happened in Baku, Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
So at the Baku Azerbaijan platform, remember, and a Namibian, obviously as a listener listening here to the Home Run, you've got to understand we are Namibia. We are developing. We are building up to a desired picture.
Vision 2030.
It's not just Vision 2030. It's African AU Agenda 2063 as well. Because we fit into that broader
CFTA.
CFTA is supposed to help us with that pathway.
Economic growth, yeah.
Yeah. And then remember, Helmut, this was the shocking discussion that I did actually, at the start of this year. Remember when you and I were divorced from each other for the holiday program?
Yeah.
So there was a discussion that came out that, Egypt had announced their particular, an investment into a high speed rail network.
Mm.
Which factors into the broader AU infrastructure pillar development. One of the pillars of the AU Vision 2063 is that you need improved transport infrastructure to connect the whole continent to each other. The second one is the AFCTA. So that's a pillar on its own, integrated trade and economic activity. The third one, I kept forgetting that guy, but the third one
combines the two.
Yeah, this particular, what Vision 2063 is supposed to do. When I looked at that discussion, that's obviously why we always sort of like, we fall back into the same content spheres, talking points every time in terms of, we highlight and position the aim.
Whatever topic you pick.
For today.
Yeah.
You can always see the interconnectedness that topic will have, not just in the Namibian agenda, National Development Plan, but also in a AU Vision 2063 plan. It then positions us in this particular scenario that at COP29 was where the least developed countries and the island states, guys, obviously when they walked out of where the true negotiations were taking place at COP29.
Yeah.
And I always thought COP29 was just 1 week long. I keep forgetting every year, now that I can watch the thing for free online. I just had to throw that in there. But it keeps you abreast of things. Yeah. It's things that everyday media can't do for other media platforms. We try to do it here for our listeners because our listeners need to understand ultimately what decisions are taking place at this intergovernmental, multilateral level that involves everyone. So, at COP29, the LDCs and the island state nations walked out. Now, Namibia is, we form part of it, but we're not in that club because the LDCs are a known international grouping or cluster. It's something like the G7, G20 cluster countries, mm-hmm. which obviously speaks of the top 20 economies and the top 7 economies. The LDCs, they are even lower than us, Helmut.
In terms of development?
In terms of development. I mean, you can just look at Malawi. You can just look at, who's the other country? Burundi. I mean, Helmut, there are countries on this continent where you would go like, my goodness. And then obviously there was our example of the day of yesterday where Rwanda seems to be in its own right, even with 14 million people, the size of Comas region, they are reaching certain particular growth issues based upon the availability of the same resource of land.
Yeah.
Now, this is where we once again fall back into the same, ultimately the same particular discussion. This is now, we looked at Rwanda, the comparison of Namibia-Rwanda yesterday.
I know, right?
The first thing that we highlighted to our listeners there was literally, look at land mass, look at the amount of space, and look at the population
size. Population size, yeah.
You come into today's discussion, this particular committee, this was from now a different committee. Yesterday's discussion was from another committee.
Yeah.
That committee had to look at infrastructure, transport, and housing.
Yeah.
This one is looking at agriculture, environment, and natural resources. They're from the National Council again, just to let you know, guys. They went there with a particular, and you can ultimately see even what the report says. These guys went there because in the motivation of the report, it says, we went there to go and understand what Namibia's position is in COP29 globally.
Yeah.
What is Namibia's nationally determined contributions? And then ultimately how the latest particular discussions, factor in agriculture in the climate change discussion, because now it has been realized at the UNFCCC platform that agriculture is a pretty important, also a negative contributor, but a pretty important dimension to take stock of in this climate change discussion. We see it in Namibia. I bring you back to the agroforestry discussion of last year,
yeah.
where agriculture in a climate change or a drought scenario, which is the guy that exposed himself, in terms of not that he, you know, took off his clothes, dear listeners. This is how we have to use English. Where I asked him the question, where did he get his water? The guy from Kavango East, the guy that had the garden in the village.
Mm-hmm.
And the water hole was for everyone's everyday use. And because they were part of one of the driest parts of the country that were experiencing severe diminished rainfall from the previous rainy season. And I asked that tricky question, how do you pay for water and whose water do you use? And he highlighted that there's a conflict scenario between him with his agriculture endeavor
and the rest of the
community. And the rest of the community's sustainability. They were all depending upon watering their animals, watering their gardens, having water for use in households. Homeboy was just using the largest of the water allocation just to water his crops. Let that sink in, Hamlet. He was using the most just to water crops. He wasn't even yet taking his bath or cooking his meals.
Look, but homeboy, at least, you know,
or washing his floors.
Homeboy who justified it by telling you that, yeah. You know, that's like that's the negative side of what he's doing. But the positive side is occasionally donating tomatoes to
and bananas and mangoes. But here's the worst part. There were Minister of Environment officials there in the audience.
When he confessed. That's painful.
And other functionaries of the government, like the two universities that were presenting.
Forgive me, Lord, for
the academic from IUM that was presenting and the academic from NUST that was presenting. And the worst thing is, even when I asked, now where's Minister of Agriculture's people at that agroforestry engagement?
Yeah, they were not there.
No, they weren't there. But what they did was they called the NUST academic and said, can you please go and speak on our behalf? And he also, expose that feed, that particular introduction right there. And so I was like, it's a, what's going on? What is guy?
You can imagine homeboy was told, can you just fill in for us? Can you just fill in for us? But I think they left out the part where don't tell others that you are filling in for us. But
until then, I asked the question, Mos.
You see, that's why you guys were always told, okay, now for this next part, you guys have to leave.
But here's the thing, Helmut. The reason I asked that question was because I realized what was going on in the presentations I was seeing. Obviously, you had the definitions that took place, the academics that stood there first. Then it was the other academic, the guy they brought in from Germany, the Englishman, that presented the concept of agroforestry in terms of a global perspective, in terms of what they've studied. Then it was the example from Kenya, the university example from Kenya. And then they got into those community engagements. There was the guy that's here on the guy that was here eastwards towards Khobabas. Then it was that guy with his community, community garden.
Yeah.
When we got to the community garden thing, because I could see the conflict in the previous guy's, guy's presentation, the guy here on the way to Khobabas, where he noted the moment they tried to do something, in a public land or in a communal land situation, Ministry of Agriculture and Ministry of Agriculture or Ministry of Environment officials intervened to say, you can't just cut off vegetation. What they tried to do was, in terms of agroforestry, and this is where things now get a little bit technical, Helmut. In agroforestry, you are technically practicing terraforming. So terraforming is literally where you change the environment to make it suitable to you. For example, in town planning, urban development, what do? You have to clear the land of the indigenous vegetation.
Level
it out, remove the big rocks, make the land sustainable for the use that you're going to apply, that you're going to apply on that land, and then you go from there. That means you've changed the conditions of the landscape to suit you, the human.
Yep.
And that's obviously what we're doing as humans. When I noted that particular issue in the second guy's presentation came up, the guy with the community garden, that's why I asked the question, where are you getting your water? If the previous presenter was, there was an intervention from government officials, from those extension officers in terms of what they were trying to do. Because the first presenter had, he was making use of environmental or land use management students from a specific university here in Windhoek. I can't remember which one. To assist in the particular project, and the project was there to assist one of the traditional authorities. So this obviously means it was on communal land. So what they were doing is they were using specific shrubs, but they were actually like making grooves in the sand. It almost looks like you are clearing land for a road. It looks like a road, like a scraper had literally scraped clear land. But then you've got shrubbery, and then they make another particular sort of like a trough, and then they do the same thing. The aim of this endeavor, what they do is so that when it rains, the water gets trapped there, which is literally the same thing that the Great Green Wall Initiative of the Sahara Desert,
yeah,
and the same thing that SADC wants to do here in Southern Africa, and the same thing obviously that the Chinese have been trying to do with the Gobi Desert.
Gobi Desert, yeah.
Meaning, use innovative mechanisms or just methods in terms of trying to trap rainwater so as to encourage vegetation growth.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.ca/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always
want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. It's a minute past the hour of five. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Terraforming.
Yeah,
natural vegetation.
So you are changing the vegetation to achieve a specific goal, obviously. Yes. Now, in this goal of agroforestry, what are you trying to achieve? You're trying to combine natural vegetation with your agricultural endeavor, which is usually crop farming. Because you're trying to support other food systems, which include insects and bird life. Obviously, cattle husbandry does the opposite. It damages grass, small plant life, like grass, types of grass and types of shrubbery. Fast forward to this particular discussion where we are. This subject matter highlights a question which has been ignored. Now, remember, Helmut, earlier in the week, I told you about Brazil and Argentina that were accused by the same platform because the IPCC, is the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Yeah. That same platform, they brought a report back in 2021 where it said, well, you guys are producing too much export, red meat wherein you have large concentrations of cattle that are giving off too much methane. I won't make the same joke then, because obviously it will just look a little bit, you know, childish to an extent. Yeah, let me just, you know, leave it there.
I know.
You're the one sitting there giggling, Helmut. But yeah, so that became an issue. Another issue is also, for example, the slash and burn tactics or techniques that is still taking place, for example, in like rainforests. So we're talking about Brazil once again. You've got the two Congos here in the Congo Basin. Where else? Also in parts of Asia as well. Because the incentive has always been farmers realized in order to make more money, increase your land size, in order to increase your production. Increased production obviously speaks about you can sell more yield into a market. You get more money so that you can have your double cap bucky. I just had to add that in there.
Is it, or you could just get a tender?
Yeah, but that would have meant you living in an urban area, and then we are talking about something else. We're back to the Rwanda discussion of yesterday.
Or you could just, you know, find someone with a car, you know, work for the right local authority, exchange a portion of land with a car, and I have to stop there because I don't have bodyguards or a lawyer.
Don't mention names, please.
Oh no, I won't. I'll mention names of cars, though. You know, Fortuna. But moving on.
So, the visit of this National Council Oversight Committee, it looked interesting, Helmut. But the thing was ultimately, you could see they were there in terms of, if I can use the word bubble, that is a bubble that they are used to from Namibia's perspective. Mm-hmm. So you're in the National Council, you sit there, you debate things, you have to wait either.
Let's go and see how these things that we're debating is
also really applied somewhere else, or how the subject matter is considered on international platforms for that matter.
Yeah. You know why I started with the example of us trying to balance a seesaw of economic growth and preservation of the environment. It's a good thing you brought up the example of Argentina and Brazil, because if you look at them, those countries are obviously they have a lot of cattle farming going on.
Mm.
Now, that goes to show you that a significant part of the economic growth is reliant on GDP and a lot of employment creation and everything is reliant upon that sector.
Mm.
So asking them to reduce that, it will obviously have a knock-on effect that will also see some type of, sort of like it will impact the economic growth.
Mm.
So the dilemma here is how do you do this transition that will allow you to sort of like not maybe just 100% balance, but to some degree is, you know, have some type of growth? Because abandoning environmental preservation, one, or all the climate change mitigation strategies, that's a growth, you know, that's a growth plan. That's also a suicide mission. You will achieve a lot of your economic growth if you throw caution to the wind. But the problem is, you are going to end up with, a deteriorating atmosphere, which is not a very good idea. Because you will have all your skyscrapers, you'll have, employment is through the roof, you have economic growth, money is, everyone has a job, everyone has a, has access to all the, to all the services. You have achieved that goal. But the problem is you have, you have deteriorated the atmosphere to the point where all you have to do to die is breathe. So now, so obviously we can't abandon one over the other.
Yeah.
We'll have to use both of them and march with them forward. Now, right now, the problem, as it can just be seen with the case with Brazil, and Brazil is not the only one. You see, this is, okay, a lot of multinational corporations that generate a largest chunk of revenue from the oil and gas industry are from developed countries.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that means developed countries are the ones that are getting, the developed countries have a large part of their economies dependent on the fossil fuel industry. So they are not going to give that up. If they did, chances are very high they will end up with a social chaos on their hands, because a lot of people will be unemployed, and then you have, your standard, it's a Hunger Games situation going on. So.
Ish.
Yeah. I know.
Now that you reference Hunger Games, can you believe that a politician in the UK used such a particular reference for a specific immigration policy back in last week?
When it comes to those guys, all I can say, on that immigration problem.
Yeah.
Dwight.
Yeah.
Here's one thing I like about life. Actions have consequences.
Yeah.
You can acknowledge those consequences, but you can ignore the consequences, but that doesn't mean they're not going to come.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys were running around the world, basically toppling leaders and bombing the heck out of countries.
Mm.
A lot of these people decided, you know what? This country is not suitable anymore. Take, for example, like Iraq.
Mm.
What do you think will happen to any country when you bomb the heck out of it? Obviously, people are going to move.
Oh, and they're going to resent you.
Like heck.
Yeah.
They're going to.
They basically will have both.
Yeah, for the most part. Exactly. Yeah. For the most part, a lot of immigration problem that, and by the way, when a country is at war, I don't think they will have, correctional facility. So you have basically helped a bunch of murderers and thieves get out of jail. And where do you think they're going to find themselves? In your country. Now, a lot of Western Europe is dealing with the problem of immigration because of a result for the most part of a countries they intervened into.
Mm.
So actions have consequences. Deal with it.
And now they want to ship those migrants back to the countries that they had intervened in.
Now that's also, if you ask me, that they just want to give someone a tender. You'll put them on a plane, drop them in the country. How are you going to convince them to stay?
Well,
you will just keep transporting them.
Let's ask the South Africans, the 50 South Africans that took up the refugee status when there was no conflict scenario in South Africa.
You know what's my favorite part about that story?
The Americans are grilling them.
There's a genocide going. Oh yeah. Americans have gone wild. And now I think one reason why I should congratulate those guys is they have united black and white people in America, because they're just
everyone, even the Mexicans or Latino Americans are like, so you're sending us back, but you're accepting these guys.
And there's the, you know, there's their own cooking all going on in South Africa. Mm. Again, it's composed of both blacks and whites. Now, yeah.
Like, man, that's a braai. Helmut, that's a braai. That's not cooking. That's a braai.
Now, you see,
there are flames involved, ne?
Man, it's a pity being on that plane because there's no place. Look, at this point, even if you hop on a plane and come back, you'll just make it worse. Because
even if they decide to come back, everyone will just say, yo, so you came back.
Look, this is the worst time the U.S. could have done this because, one, they are supporting a literal genocide going on in Israel, going on in Gaza.
And in,
no one is criticizing that. But
and in Ukraine. Because what many people
they're
forget.
Making all that up.
What many people forget about the ugliness of Ukraine is that, technically speaking, and this is now obviously also part of the conversations that France had with the Ukrainian guy that he interviewed here that our listeners also heard back in last month.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that subject matter, and if people listen to that interview, I dare you guys, just go listen to the interview itself. It's obviously not to say that in a Namibian context that we are Russian supporters or we are pro-Russian, even though it would sound that way. You just have to look at things really objectively to understand, okay, what ultimately happened with that country. But I'm digressing greatly. To get back to what you were saying, Helmut, in that particular context of, you know, the trade-off of whether you're doing development. The economic growth is the overall theme.
Yeah.
But the strategies you're employing, are you going to follow industrialization? Not the industrialization of a factory in every constituency.
Not that one.
But.
I know.
But.
I read it too.
But. The other particular aspect in terms of also, what kind of agriculture do you want to achieve in your country?
Yeah.
Helmut, would you be able to farm with anything? If, let's for example, I was the Minister of Agriculture, I'm not trying to be Minister of Agriculture, but we're speaking hypothetically here. Let's say I'm Minister of Agriculture. And what's that thing, that resettlement farm program that they've got going? And I issue, and you get a resettlement farm through that program as a Namibian. But guess where your farm is? In a desert. You're either in the Kalahari Desert, or you're either close to the Namib Desert.
What are you farming in the desert?
I'm going to ask you, that's just what I'm going to ask you, Helmut, because you've had more farming exposure than I have had.
Mm-hmm.
I only have family that have been farming, or that were the children of farmers, or that, you know, but I didn't go and have responsibility of assets that are exposed to elements like wild animals, specifically predators, or the other predatory kind of animal, you know,
like slaughtering your own
cattle rustlers and those guys that do stock theft. Yeah,
the predators, you know, in All Stars.
So, yeah, sometimes they wear leather sandals also, and some of them even try to load it up in tanki Botswanas.
They wear them in reverse, so that you can. They don't do that.
Who wears a leather sandal and a leather?
Well, so that when you follow the footprint, you can go to where they are coming from, not where they are going.
I found out like that one meme that I just saw about the guy that tried to say consequences.
Oh.
Was it your meme? It was your meme.
Whatever you are does. We'll take a commercial break and we'll continue on the other side. Home run with Helmut and Dwight. Otherwise, there will be consequences.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it. Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
Thank you. Oulium Nangeshifa, Noahara Pushivifa, Oma Kuro Ekupitira Mohorike Radio Station, Ayo Eagle FM, Enyamukuro Olongaha. Ningekwata fano na Monica, Koshikondoshe Ipindi, Konorahita Tuimwe, Heari Imwe, Ne Heari, Imwe Imwe, Nohamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa, Konorahita Tunatu, Bali Oheta Tuvatatu, Ne Nola No Natu. Ninge, Tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opomone, Oshijemo, Shiri, Nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. It's 16 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we are talking about the report is recent, but the visit is coming, was done last year. That's because, COP30 haven't taken place yet, which is, that's the conference of parties taking place this year. This report was done by the Committee on Agriculture, Environment and Natural Resources, based on COP29 that took place in Azerbaijan last year. But, the angle we have picked, like I pointed out earlier, for today's discussion is, everyone, basically all countries, trying to balance between their developmental programs with, climate change mitigation strategies as it's, as the climate, 2015 Paris agreements dictate.
Another particular thing that also stands out from this, obviously. Yeah. Remember I mentioned the bubble that this committee moved in. So they visited the IPU pavilion, or they had an IPU meeting as well. Inter-Parliamentary Union, which is the global.
There was an IPU pavilion.
Yeah. They had a meeting there, and then they had the AU, they visited the AU pavilion as well. So why I use the word this bubble movement that the committee did was obviously you can see that the committee when said, okay, so let's see what is AU trying to talk about. So the AU obviously were talking about the main themes, development, sustainable growth. Obviously Africa is dealing with multiple issues on the continent. We're trying to alleviate some the side. We don't know how to stop some, i.e. like, military dictators who decide to fight each other. And then on the other side, they are talking about financing for projects in countries across the continent.
There's someone that just passed a law to try civilians in military courts. I think that was yesterday, but yeah. I know. Oh, we are going in reverse. Civilians in military courts. Yo, that's taking dictatorship to a whole another level.
Aish, do you know what that actually leads to, Hamad?
That
it leads to the death penalty being brought through because military courts.
So then you can make everything treason.
Basically, yes. You can also immediately you can take on judges, the judiciary. Because the judiciary are civilian.
Yep.
So that means that the constitution of the country is trumped by a military court, which technically does not have to follow a constitution.
Nope. Actually, that's the reason, the painful thing is, that's part of the reasons why, why Edward Snowden left for Russia, because he knew that, with an expose like that, he would not be tried in, most likely not going to be tried in civilian courts, because, the information that was going to be talked about in these courts is, high level security clearance. You'll have to be something either, court proceedings that are closed to a lot of civilians, and at this point you could be telling people that you have a court proceeding when the person that you are supposedly you have on trial is basically being tortured in some dungeon somewhere. So it's a lot of shady stuff when you bring in the military, which is why there should be a clear-cut line between civilian life, civilian courts, and...
Guess who it is?
I know.
I can't believe it.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same tin pot, tin foil cap.
Civilians in military courts. Yo. I've read a lot of books about dictators. I've never heard of that one.
Do you know where that particular discussion stems from?
Where?
Because in February of this year, that country's Supreme Court or High Court, no, Supreme Court said,
the military
has no business in the affairs of civilian courts and civilian systems and civilian lives.
Yep.
But this is lawmakers in the parliament of this country. Guess who it is, dear listeners? It's Uganda.
Yep.
I think they should become a meme or an emoji. You know, if things go bad, you're a Uganda. But anyway. So, the bubble movement discussion that I alluded to a little bit earlier is a talking point, Helmut, that stems from we already have agencies. Okay, let's set the scene like this, Helmut. sorry guys. We already have active agencies and departments and ministries who are doing their part. At most, it's Minister of Environment, followed, like in terms of line of authority, the Environmental Investment Fund, followed then by any other particular designated agencies and so forth that have a particular discussion or some sort of stake in the discussion of environmental management and sustainable development in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
I have a big issue, though, in terms of whether or not Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform is also one of that enabling agencies. Because as far as I've now seen, Helmut,
yeah.
Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform would show up with, what's the thing's name? What's the thing's name that you kill pests with? Pesticide.
Right.
They'll show up with pesticides, which is a chemical.
Yep.
Which is a chemical that can kill also plant life.
Yep.
Remember, there's also herbicide, there's pesticide. It can also seep into, through your ground, through your soil structures, it can seep into your groundwater.
Yep.
It can impact bird life. It can impact other insect life. So, they would show up with insecticides to try and help local farmers, or communal farmers, or small farmers, with, you know, dealing with a pest issue. But the solution is just surface level. The solution is just on the top of the things. It's skin deep. Because you can see what the immediate solution is trying to bring, which technically in most cases speaks about you're trying to solve an immediate issue for a community. But then what happens if that insecticide or pesticide or whatever you're using there, chemical, that the ministry has at its disposal, impacts environmental management for the Ministry of Environment?
So,
there are mechanisms taking place that are in contradiction to things that the Ministry of Environment tries to do. And it comes through from their system ministers. Their system ministers are doing things where you have to ask the question. Now, that's just why I asked that question in the agroforestry discussion. I just hear about agroforestry, and there's Ministry of Environment people standing there. And I asked, now where's Ministry of Agriculture's people? Because you guys are talking about agriculture and environmental management. You are suggesting agriculture and environmental management.
Yeah, just look at the term itself, agroforestry.
Yeah, because the agro comes before it.
Because agro, that's short for agriculture. Forestry, yeah. That's very clear cut. So, this goes to show that, this is something, I mean, I'm not an expert, but this is something that two ministries, at least here in Namibia, should be having. That's agriculture and environment, environment, forestry and tourism.
Yeah.
Now, on the practical part of agroforestry, if you are going to do agroforestry, we first have to understand that plants, just the very same way that we are, also compete for resources that's in the soil. Now,
And the animals. And the wild animals.
Yeah, wild animals. Now, for that, and also it's good to know that different plants are eaten by different, by different insects.
Yep.
This is, we're talking about revolutionizing, expanding agricultural textbooks.
Yep.
Because now not only do you have to understand the type of, the type of plants that you are farming with, but also the type of, of wild plants, for example, that you want to incorporate in your agroforestry practice. Now, so you will have to understand the best way to take, for example, if you are planting with maize, and the right water for the right water for the crop that you are for the crop that you are growing, and the right pesticide for it. The right pesticide and the type of pests that attack that specific crop, and the type of the forest aspect part of your practice. You also have to individually understand that plant too.
Yeah.
Now, so that means if you are planting with maize needs a lot of attention in terms of water supply. So that means you are going to need a plant that have some types of resemblance in terms of needs and care to maize. Now, because if you take, for example, a plant that is adapted to an arid environment like a desert and grow it together with maize, that thing is going to die because of overwatering.
Yep.
And because of the competition in resources in terms of water and nutrition, that means if you have having maize alone is going to require some degree of fertilizer supply. Now an extra plant that you are bringing into your practice, that means you have to double the supply of fertilizer, because if you just supply less, there's that competition is also going to impact your practice negatively. So we are talking about a whole different type of agricultural practice going on here.
You are right, Helmut.
So that means education has just become even more important.
And to top that off, think back, Helmut, because what you and I will always do, and that's obviously one of the synergistic aspects in terms of the thinking that we apply to the home run. Go back to Tuesday's discussion where we did the FDI report.
In Africa,
Where we analyzed the FDI report. Remember back to the priority sectors for development and FDI attraction and investment attraction?
Ouch.
In there is chemicals and pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
Now, I'm going to position, just for the sake of, for our listeners to think about it, I'm going to position a particular thought process. So if we work with the explainer that you just gave now, that explainer, if we start from the beginning where you identified that a pesticide or herbicide is made for a specific either a weed or for a specific
insect,
insect, right? But that plant, that weed, and that insect, that pest, are natural.
Yeah, they're part of a larger food chain.
Besides the food chain discussion. The food chain is important because for the communal farmer to understand what impact they will have, they are not educated on what impact they are imposing on the natural foods, on the natural food systems that exist out in nature without the human. And like I said, imagine a scenario for example, when that red locust showed up here and the Minister of Agriculture went onto the ground with their sprayers and they modified Land Cruiser buckies in order. No, because it was a modified Land Cruiser bucky. Yeah, before that, we've got an ad break, guys.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Twenty-nine minutes left to the hour of six. Modified Land Cruiser. Go.
Yeah. So they show up there with a chemical. The chemical, I don't care how someone tries to sell to me about a chemical, about plastic. Anything that is synthetically made, has an element of toxicity to it.
Yeah.
Meaning it's not something that can either be, that can be biodegradable, meaning it's broken down by nature.
Yeah.
It's not something that can be accidentally ingested by any living form, whether it be, you know, insect, plant life, or even animal life, or so forth, reptilian, or so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Synthetic things have a knack of being toxic in most cases. Because most cases, they're made from a toxic concoction of chemicals.
They have a way of fighting with nature.
Exactly.
They're never in cohesion.
Hamoud, there's a gas. What's the gas's name? Is it sarin gas? And then there's Agent Orange from the First World War.
Like nerve gases?
Yeah, the nerve gases.
Yeah.
The reason why nerve gases were banned out of warfare and why it became such a huge thing during the Syrian Syrian Civil War.
Bashar al-Assad regime,
Before Bashar was now jumped on his private jet to Moscow.
Yeah.
Was literally that the effects. People have seen the effects of what, okay, Saddam Hussein didn't care in the Gulf War, the first Gulf War. Because he even used it on the American soldiers. He used it most on the Iranians. No one cared in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that stage, it was the Americans that actually, supported him.
Yeah, they were homies at the time.
Yeah, to attack the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
Until he changed his attitude towards the Kuwaitis, who in some, it almost looked like your quintessential, you know, what do you call it, that cartel movies, that movies based upon drug cartels where all the conflict starts from one guy accusing the other guy of stealing too much money or skimming money, too much money off what the overall pay cut is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then there you go. Because he attacked the Kuwaitis were allies of the Saudis. The Saudis asked the Americans, please step in.
You know, that war is, if you can find out something, if you can find something called Naira testimony.
Yeah.
Is there's this, I think she's a 16-year-old girl. It was found out later that she's the daughter of the Kuwait ambassador to the US.
Yeah.
That was more like prepped up by the American intelligence to give a testimony in Congress that led to the invasion of Iraq. I think that was Operation Desert Storm in 1991.
Yeah.
When you look at that, then you realize that, there were homies in the 80s when they had economic interest in Iraq.
Mm.
But as soon as those economic interests changed, they became enemies, like, you know, the next day. So, a lot of things that is that we are told by a lot of mainstream media, which is why there is a lot of shift for in terms of news consumption or information consumption from a lot of consumers from mainstream media from mainstream media to social media, which now to some degree mainstream media can be blamed for misinformation because it's their misinformation which led people to move from trusting them to straight up social media where a lot of things is AI generated, which is difficult to tell what is true and what is not. So the biggest problem behind misinformation is mainstream media.
Mm.
Because if they did their job by asking the right questions at the right time, one, they could have prevented a lot of lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two, they could have gained even more trust from a lot of people that are consuming news from social media these days.
Yeah.
And when someone is consuming social media news, you can bet because of lack of regulation and establishment and, and the editorial policies, there is a lot of fake news that's going to be floating around and not everyone can spot the difference.
Yeah.
Now, for that Kuwaiti story is a fascinating one in a way that Well, weapons of mass destruction was not the first lie that was told to and used as an excuse to invade Iraq.
Mm.
But coming back to the agriculture and the insect, let me take you back to what you said earlier.
Yeah.
If you're going to practice agriculture, you have to understand that the plants that we are going to practice, the plants that we're going to plant, they will, they form part, first of all, we didn't create them out of the blue. They are part of the, they were part of the natural ecosystem at some point. So we decided to domesticate it. And that domestication means, means there are still animals in the wild that can consume this, this plant. So we call those what? Pests. So we decided to invent pesticide.
Yeah.
But, this pesticide, like you pointed out earlier, are part of the larger in the wild ecosystem. Or, food chain. So by decimating them with our, with our, insect side, we are causing, damage to the environment we are trying to save because we are causing a disruption in the food chain that these insects play a significant role in.
Mm.
Boy, are we screwed.
No, we are, Helmut. I mean, when even anyone has to look at the aspect of trying to deal with plastic pollution, you can't burn plastic because then you release
carbon monoxide.
The other thing you release, there's a lethal toxin in plastic. You release it into the air.
There's another oxide.
But it's not the monoxide because monoxide is generally made from a car's engine, carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
From the combustion process.
Yeah, it's a half bend. Yeah, it's an incomplete combustion of that will give you carbon dioxide.
But there's something else because it's poisonous specifically.
Of course, it's going to be poisonous.
The burning plastic has a poisonous condition to it.
Yeah,
you can't bury plastic like with nuclear waste because the thing can just be outlive as well as also humanity or societies technically like nuclear waste.
Yeah.
Or you can't just dump it in the sea because there's also biodiversity there.
Yeah.
And even today, there was a celebration hosted by, is it Ministry of Agriculture or Ministry of Environment in Okahania or in Otjivarongo about the global biodiversity celebration that took place today. Now, I want to focus on a particular notion, for example, that's contained in this report that aids part of the discussion that we are having here. On the background and introduction page, which is literally the first particular section of this report, they note there, to boost the effectiveness of the 1992 UNFCCC Kyoto Protocol, it was updated in 1997, December of that year. It committed industrialized countries and countries in transition to a market economy to achieve quantified emissions reduction targets for a basket of 6 greenhouse gases. The Kyoto Protocol's first commitment period took place from 2008 to 2012. In December 2015, parties adopted the Paris Agreement, which requires all parties to determine, plan, and regularly report on their NDCs. Now, Namibia's particular scenario is that we've participated in this globally. It says so in the fourth paragraph of that introduction background. Namibia signed its UNFCCC also in 1992, and it ratified it in 1995. Now, when we try to see the aspect in terms of Namibia's particular role, what it looks like, how Namibia is factoring into this particular discussion, is that Namibia has played a game, let me take that out. Namibia has played a strategy and a role of mitigation and adaptation. Hence the reason why the former Minister of Environment at both the Conference of Parties and at the desertification platform, Helmut, said if only the industrialized part of the world sticks to the commitments that they made in 2020, COP28 in UAE, where they promised for specifically like the loss and damage fund, that the loss and damage fund will start becoming active. Now, if the loss and damage fund is made active, Helmut, then the countries like the LDCs, developing nations like Namibia, which are now middle income developing nations, small island states can now apply for, you know, for funding to assist in mitigation and adaptation strategies on the ground.
Yeah.
So if you see that you've got a, that you've got lack of rainfall happening in you in that year, you can actually dispense mechanisms. If you have, like we've had with the drought relief discussions.
Yeah.
Helmut, if you have, if the drought relief in Namibia, even if you, let's for now ignore like the particular scandal that took place in, is it in the Zambezi or is it in Kavanguese?
Which one?
The one of the drought relief that was used, that was actually repurposed to be sold.
Yeah, I know.
Was it Zambezi or Kavanguese? Rundo or Katima?
I'm not sure, but one of the two.
Yeah, one of the two. So, okay, let's ignore that particular thing because it obviously sees that there's always opportunists in the Namibian society.
Yeah, on all levels.
On all levels.
Yeah.
So, if you look at drought relief, it was dispensed through Ministry of Agriculture with Office of the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
But most of the efforts on the ground of mitigation and adaptation is run by Ministry of Environment. I'm not praising anyone here. I'm not praising anyone. I'm just describing the moves. That's why I like looking at what are the actions of people. And ministers can make a speech here, but you've got to look at who's taking the lead of something.
Yeah.
Who's in charge of something? Who's the actual authority or the designated authority on this particular subject matter? And you see in most cases, when it comes to land and when it comes to water, it's Ministry of Environment. It's not always Ministry of Agriculture. But the drought relief was through Office of the Prime Minister, through Ministry of Agriculture. But it was Ministry of Environment that goes to COP29 and to COP16, the desertification one, to literally say the same message. Please, the industrial, the developed countries and the advanced economies, you guys made commitments at COP28 in UAE. You agreed that the loss and damage fund would be activated. It has not been activated because the UAE started a loss and damage fund, which is literally run as a private equity or private investment or private management. But it's a private capital investment management, that long-term thing that they've got there.
Yeah.
It's literally run like that. And it's literally a sovereign wealth fund on its own. Under the UAE branch of things. Which obviously tells everyone that now it doesn't look like this loss and damage thing will kick off because the UAE went and started something on itself, has decided to, you know, incorporate, investors from other economies that have a lot of money. And you as Namibia, you have to sell some sort of a stake somewhere, like what Zimbabwe has had to do with the one forest for carbon credits.
Yeah.
Who did they sell it to? Is it Qatar?
Must be the UAE.
Was it not Qatar? It's Qatar or the other one, Bahrain. It's one of the two countries.
Bahrain. During COP28, where did COP28 take place?
COP28
was UAE.
Dubai.
During that very same summit, criticism started coming out of that very same, around that summit, that the UAE, I think, used a private firm known as Blue Carbon to acquire multiple hectares of land across the African continent for carbon credit discussion.
Is it carbon credit or is it carbon? It's the carbon capturing discussion because carbon capturing is tied to the carbon credit mechanism. But in most cases, the one document that I saw, it looks more and more like a carbon credit scam.
Carbon credit itself is one of those initiatives that's been questioned in this climate mitigation strategy because is going to make it look like indulgences during Papal Rome, where if you were rich, you could just pay your way, and then now if you are not, you can just have to show up and confess every now and then.
Or it's like you, Helmut, you are the Pope during that particular time in Christian history, mm-hmm. and your brother is the king. And every time let's say your brother is Henry VIII, he wants to divorce his wife, he comes to you and you say, no, I bless it.
No, you are blessed. And yeah, then it's bless a total stranger comes and you're like, no.
You have to respect the sacraments of the faith.
You have to respect the sanctity of the institution
of marriage.
Like a million times.
That means even if she really tries to kick you out of the house, you gotta love her.
Stick with it. You know.
You chose her. But then that guy would go like, I didn't choose.
You know what? I would just go and start my own church. That was King Henry VIII's plan. And he did. Now, there's one biggest question mark. More like, elephant in the room in this whole climate mitigation strategy. Mm. First of all, climate mitigation strategy, it was agreed upon by a lot of countries. I think by now the agreement is signed by about 190 something countries. That's the Paris climate agreements.
Mm.
Now, funding is one of the biggest problem when it comes to basically every initiative that we're going to come up with.
Yeah.
Now, developing countries, just hear me out. Developing countries are reliant on mostly developed countries to provide funding to help us with our transition. Now, developed countries, how do they make most of their money? Is it by green economic initiatives or non-green economic initiatives? A lot of them, like I pointed out earlier, a lot of multinational corporations that specialize in fossil fuel extraction are coming from developed countries.
Do you know what?
Now, most of these guys obviously donate a huge chunk of money to their countries. That money is most likely part of it is what is being used to give us, to help us in the transition. So there is a dilemma of their own transition. First of all, they can't stop, they can't stop trading fossil fuel or using it to, as an economic revenue, because then they won't have, money to run their economy. And they won't have enough money to, for both running their economy and giving us to help in our transition.
Yep.
So, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
But here's the weird thing, Hamad. And this is now where financing gets weird. There are only three economies on this planet that can print money. Let me ask you, if you have an economy as a country, and you've got your own central bank.
Yeah.
But because your central bank cannot print money, because otherwise you will sit with the Great Depression scenario of the 1930s.
On the bright side, everyone will have money. On the bright side, the money will be worthless.
Yeah. You are dependent upon that same particular developed economies to be the determining factors in your economy, even though you are 15,000 kilometers away from them.
Yeah.
That's an exaggeration, which is actually, it is, because it is an exaggerated number. The downside of what I'm telling you right now, actually four. It's four economies. It's not three. It's Japan, it's the EU, it's the UK, it's America. Those four guys, if they are the only ones that can practice quantitative easing.
In English.
So quantitative easing, Helmut. When we are worried about loans costing more because of interest rates that the banks are being charged by the central bank, because that supposedly is the mechanism, one of the mechanisms that the central bank has to combat inflation in a country. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Those guys have two mechanisms at their disposal. Those four economies mm-hmm. have two mechanisms. I'm explaining.
They can do it our way, or they can just
go out they can free. Just print money.
Isn't that going to put them on a downward spiral towards the Great Depression also?
But do you know what they do with that money? That money is literally flushed through their banks. Their banks finance this, which you and I are talking about right here. So it positions like the first, that thing that I just read from that first part, background and context of this report. It's literally the basis that they're using. They're using their financial system It is a leverage system that it speaks to. But before I continue, we've got a quick ad live read to conduct.
Imagine working for a printing, you know, for a money printing company and you are broke. How do you explain that?
There is no
That's just me thinking in my morning show type of way.
Out loud. Velvice live read. This is the Velvice University September intake for 2025. For September 2025. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Certificate in Health Sciences Foundation Level 4. This is a one-year full-time course available at all campuses. Certificate for enrolled nurse, midwife, or accoucheur, level 6. This is a 2 years full-time available in Windhoek and Kurinkuru Combat, Walvis Bay, Mkatimu Mulilu, and Otapi. Diploma in environmental health sciences, level 6. This is a 2 years course full-time available in Windhoek only. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. This is a 4 years full-time course available in Windhoek and Kurinkuru, Combat, Walvis Bay, and Katimu Mulilu. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8. This is a one-year, full-time course available only in Windhoek. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. This is a one-year course, full-time available only in Windhoek. Application period is 1 May to 30 June 2025. For more information, call 061-225463 or 225462. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So, obviously taking you to Waterberg and bringing you back on that scenic route from the Ochazonchupawa region back to Windhoek here in Klein Windhoek, the discussion of the global financing structure starts once again showing its annoying side to the developing zones of the world like us.
Inequality.
Yes, that too. Plus also having the ability of taking charge of your destiny. That's the overall theme. Because the overall theme would have been, Helmut, that the AU Development Bank, which the same committee guys bumped into there at the COP29 last year, they themselves spoke about the sustainable development aspect, looking at obviously trying to adapt and mitigate, just like Namibia's particular ethos has been, and then obviously trying to sort out all the other particular problematic issues in the African governance sphere, which usually is civil wars, wars, which is technically that, like the DRC, East DRC conflict zone, and other particular troubling scenarios, for example. I even read there are people that are obviously surprised at the treatment that that South Africa's president yesterday received at the White House. I anticipated that kind of reaction.
Yep.
It has happened to Zelensky. It has happened to Meloni from Italy. It has happened to Macron from France. But Macron was clever, Helmut. He didn't go he went to Trump, but he was actually one of the few that actually jumped the gun. He himself, he was imposing his presence. Instead of you allowing Trump to play tennis the whole time with the flow of things. Trump has done this to Mark Carney, the new Prime Minister of Canada, which should obviously show you as to why Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin haven't also gotten onto a plane to fly to Washington to go and shake his hand in person.
You know,
Narendra Modi. No, Modi did do this. Modi also flew to him.
You know, one thing I've come to learn is that in politics,
yeah,
the language that matters, you know, that yells the loudest, is the one that's not, you know, is the inaudible one.
Yeah,
you know, it's about what you are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more about what you are doing than what you are saying. Take for example, the invitation. Any invitation, are you going to show up or not? How are you going to show up? How, yeah. you know, what type of questions are you asked? I learned this, observing how the Russian president conducts his meetings with other nations leaders. Whether you are friendly or an enemy, you are going to know by the the size of a table that he's going to use during your meeting.
Yeah. Either it'll be a small bedside lamp table.
A small bedside lamp table.
Or it'll be a long dinner table for no reason.
Uh-huh.
No. And there's no food on that table.
No, absolutely. You know, just a... And they're just sitting there casually with the, you know, with the French president. And now I'm looking at these things, and one thing that you can easily understand is that there are a lot of languages that's spoken. You know, there's a lot of languages that are spoken in politics. One is the inaudible one. That one matters the most. One part that I will just have to more like give Ramaphosa credit was how he handled the whole thing. I think, part of me feels like they expected him to show up and throw a tantrum or something.
Mm.
Yeah. But he showed up very collected and answered, all the type of ridiculous questions that, you know, that were basically thrown away. Can you believe they included a presentation?
No, the
PowerPoint,
worst.
PowerPoint,
the worst of the
projector.
Worst,
come on.
No, the worst of the presentations was that it was all about Julius Malema. Meaning, he's political, and this is now where every day, Helmut, I get new education happening that it's like a software update. You get a new patch. Software updates into my brain. And I bounce this off with, in terms of understanding, you know, why do we always see the extremes of politicians? Why do we have politicians that are tuning into the extremes of discussions? For example, that's how Donald Trump got there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the everyday life, Helmut, you just go observe your family and even your parents, even friends. You remember the references you made to friends that said they don't know what subject matter or your zones of interest are even.
No.
Do you know that those people like that are moderates? They're central, they're centrists. They are not extreme left. So that they're not talking about chaos and anarchy. They are not extreme right. They're not talking about totalitarianism and subscribing to military rule or whatever or dictatorships. They're just people that just want a job. They just want to live their lives. They want to marry. They just want to grow. They just want things to work.
It's like trying to live in a vacuum.
No, it's not. It's not, Helmut. Walk out here. You will see everyone that is now trying to get a cab here in Kleinmundtuk. It's exactly those people. Besides, obviously, the people that they also work for, who are also the same. Because if you go and ask any mother, any father today, now you walk out and you just ask them a question. What concerns do you have? They'll tell you, I need to care about my 6-year-old that needs to sleep tonight.
Yeah.
What food they need to eat. And they will tell you that the furthest thing from their concerns is a politician's concerns.
Oh, dear.
So technically what the media is doing, and this is now obviously where media framing comes in,
yeah,
is that media that love hyping a politician's particular perspectives, you're actually increasing that guy's visibility.
Well, you know, during South African's political campaigns before the elections last year,
yeah,
and this whole AI-generated video of Donald Trump endorsing Jacob Zuma, started going viral. I'm one of those people that looked at that video and went like, "There's no way this is gonna happen.
There's no way.
There's no way Donald Trump will endorse an African leader." Well, I have to apologize.
Yeah.
He just endorsed Julius Malema because homeboy is now famous.
Now he's very famous.
Oh, he's really famous.
Julius Malema is being cited or videos of his are being watched. Not just at White House. By famous streamers, influencers in the United States, like Asmund Gold. So Asmund Gold shows up and I see this morning on my YouTube timeline. Mm-hmm. Asmund Gold is going like, now Asmund Gold thinks that Ramaphosa doesn't know about the antics of Malema. Because remember, Trump asked Ramaphosa, yeah, now what about those other guys that are making those antics and shouting those things? And then Ramaphosa went was like, what are you talking about? No, don't worry about those guys, but what are you talking about? And then Trump goes like, yeah, we've got videos. Duh. The SABC broadcasted it. The ETV, ENCA News broadcasted it. Of course, the other political parties would know about it. So at that moment, you could literally see that potentially Ramaphosa somehow his, you know, his thought process short-circuited because mm-hmm. he was trying to now think of a response now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't know how American media reacts.
Yeah, it's as divided as the political parties
are. Exactly. In South Africa, the South African media attacks any politician. They don't like any politician. They like the English media.
Yeah.
But the English media have favorites. The English media would attack each, the political.
Yeah, the very same thing that the, is the
opposite,
in the US.
The opposite
like,
politician.
Yeah, where like, Fox News would attack Biden, but yeah. not Trump, but then CNN would attack, you know, Trump, not Biden.
But not Biden.
Yeah.
So, this particular scenario, Ramaphosa doesn't know how to deal with that. So, Asmund Gold, this particular streamer, now says, yeah, he thinks Ramaphosa doesn't know. And I was like, cringing, I'm like, oh my goodness. Do you really
he's
think
we, from South Africa.
Do you really think we don't have TVs? And we don't watch TV and internet here in Southern
Media,
Africa?
Yeah, I swear. Okay, you know what?
I sat there frowning. I even was about to type on Asmund Gold's thing, but then I remembered the video that I'm watching of Asmund Gold is literally, he did the stream, Helmut, on Twitch, which is owned by Amazon.
Yeah.
And anything he does, so that means it's firstly live interactions there
mm-hmm.
for his paying audience.
Audience, yeah.
And then anything that was recorded there is put on his YouTube channel for the other audience to also see what was the content back then. So anything I post here in terms of now being an Africa and, you know, an African sort of like sympathizing with Ramaphosa's particular, you know, the humiliation he went through last night. Would not reach the message. It would not reach the person.
Mm-mm.
But I also don't want to go pay now for a subscription to go to go watch now to go watch one guy talking. He sits there the whole day, 16 hours in his room. Yeah, he makes a boatload of money just talking. How much that guy makes? $39,000 last month. Just from talking and playing video games. What are we doing with our lives, bruh?
We are playing video games, that's for sure. But the money part, I think we miss the bus on that one.
No, this is people just watching him playing video games.
The problem with those source of revenue is how you start. Because the beginning, before you cultivate the audience that gives you that money, you are going to have to find an extra source of revenue because for it to build up to that level, it's going to take time.
Yeah,
especially if you are in Namibia.
Especially
if you are in Namibia, it's going to take time. So, we are 3 minutes into the hour of six. And now with that, Washington DC detour, let's, coming back to our report, I will still conclude by saying we have a dilemma here. Developed countries, out of the kindness of their hearts or whatever goal they have in mind, wants to help us with our green energy transition to save for climate change and preservation of the environment and obviously the future of our planet. Now, that's one. But, the way that they are making this money is not green in any way.
No, it's not.
For the most part. Yeah, now, that money is the one that they are giving us. So in other words, if they just stopped all their non-green economic activities to save the, to save the environment and, as part of their climate change mitigation strategy, first of all, their economies would run out of money. Our transition would run dry really fast if there's something that we have learned from the, from Donald Trump's foreign policy, especially about US aid. That was a very clear message that, if someone in Washington, closed the tap, we're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, for me, that's a dilemma that we're facing. First of all, you can't make a loss that will tell people what to do without giving them an alternative form, an alternative source of either how to find food, that's where the agricultural practice comes in, or how to find the right fuel. That's where, things like firewood now comes in. So, this is going to take a while.
Yeah, It'll definitely. But that's also why you see, Helmut, that their banks are the biggest in the world. All this funding that's now currently taking place, There's obviously one currently and most now active, because I've been going to so many events where I find interesting discussions and subject matter, and then I see, huh, this is how the funding is flowing.
Okay, and this funding is in the form of loans, right?
No.
It's just a...
It's to help. No. So, okay, let me tell you the story. So, for now, I won't say who it is from, but I've done the story about it before already. So, I asked one of the particular concerned parties who received this funding at the start of the year, mm-hmm. you know, so, how does this funding come about? For Namibian CSOs, civil society organizations.
Yeah.
And then it was explained to me. So when this entity, that's one of Namibia's development partners, gives funding also to the Namibian government for its development endeavors, they also give funding to CSOs. So this funder funds like this. Hence the reason why at that particular engagement where the funding was unveiled, this is now the EU funding at the start of this year, funding unveiling of 42 million Namibian dollars for the next 3 years. The National Planning Commission's new executive director, Mr. Michael Hamuvindu, was present, because the NPC, the National Planning Commission, is part of the sort of like an interview review panel situation.
No kidding.
So as to ensure that the right CEOs who have capability, have built up, you know, over time their particular endeavors in the various aspects of sustainable resource management, rural development, as well as also other initiatives and policy initiative, you know, stuff like that, or public policy review, they are weighed and assessed with the insight from the government.
You know, for a lot of money, you need a lot of oversights.
That's the only aspect.
Really?
Yeah, that's the only aspect of oversight. In terms of, you know, what sector of the CSOs can be part of this particular funding discussion, what their CVs technically speak of, and what their impact has been. So,
part of going to take a lot of summits.
So part of the,
I'm telling you.
I was also hit for a six there with that thing, because my mind, you know that meme that goes like, you know, you
like
just
mind blown.
It's just mind blowing. Literally, I was like, because I asked the question, doesn't this funding look a bit suspicious?
Yeah.
And then I was explained to me, no. So first, the government of Namibia gets its funding for development from the EU, and then CSOs get theirs. Which helped to explain the discussion we had of the report on capital projects.
Oh yeah.
And also the medium-term expenditure framework. The new
1,000 pages.
The 1,000-page one.
Yeah.
How can it go from 500 to 1,000? 1,100 even.
We are developing.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely developing.
By 500 pages.
Yeah. And, you know, we are carrying a large part of that developmental budget ourselves, and I'm so proud of us for that.
Yeah. Which is good.
Which is good.
But the external funding is still there.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good also.
Developmental partner. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
But,
thank you.
9 minutes into the hour of six. Now it's time for business and economic segment.
We're going to hand over, and you can catch us again. Same time, same place tomorrow, dear listeners. Here on your number one talk radio station, this has been The Home Run.
Olum nangeshifa no hara kushivifa oma akuro yokupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enyamukuro olongaha. Ninge kwatafano na Monica kushikondo shipindi konorahita twimwe heari imwe ne heari imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147116. Mamberewa konorahita tu natu mbali oheta tu vatatu ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na opo umone oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.